Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective Eastern Conference Preview. God, I hate previews. We just call it Eastern Conference Preview because that's what our bosses wanted to call it. We'll just talk about the East. And just to show you the irony that I have about the Eastern Conference Preview, Andrew Hahn and I have asked two people that are not only Western Conference people, but are in Seattle right now. Because today, we're recording this on Friday, October 5th, and the NBA is back in Seattle, which means that Warriors beat writer Nick Friedell is joining us from Seattle. Nicholas, hello.
B, it's great to be with you, and it is great to be around the Warriors every day after all those years with the Bulls and the Bucks and the Timberwolves.
But you know the East, and that's why we're gonna. That's why we have you on.
That's right. I'm here for you.
Had you? I don't remember when you started at ESPN. Had you ever covered a game in Seattle before tonight?
No, and I am so looking forward to this because I came here in high school on a class field trip, and this is before everything.
Class went field to hell. Trip. What the hell kind of high school did you go to?
You went to
high school in Orlando. That's a long ass way from Seattle.
I know, and I couldn't stand flying at that point, so I kept looking up at that map, and we took off in Orlando, and I kept telling my buddies, wow, we're going a really far way, and it was like 6 hours before the time we actually got there. But
So we tried
to get into a game at Key Arena on this trip, and it was sold out completely, and I was crushed because I had always wanted to see a game in here. So seeing this game on Friday night with Kevin Durant in his old city is going to be awesome.
I just want to point out that this is publishing on Monday, so when you're
He can say that. We said that we're recording it on Friday.
Okay.
Andrew, what was the best field trip you went on in high school?
I think I went to the Museum of Tolerance several times because I needed to learn some tolerance.
also joining us from Seattle, a rare home game. When I say rare, I mean rare. And yes, we're recording this on Friday. It's publishing on Monday. Just deal with it. A rare home game. Kevin Pelton. How do you feel about going to an NBA? You go to a lot of WNBA games, but how do you feel about going to a W or an NBA game back home in Seattle tonight?
Yeah, and not only an NBA game, but the last event at the arena before the renovations, the rebuild of it begins this winter. So it's going to be an emotional, nostalgic night with a bunch of Sonics legends in the house. And I'm excited that Nick is here to double our Seattle bureau.
And what was your best field trip in high school? Where was the farthest you went?
I mean, we went to Seattle, too, but, you know, that was just like a 15-minute drive from the suburbs where
big.
I was going to high school.
Right.
But we often would go to the Seattle Art Museum where the Hammering Man statue is. And this was always enjoyable as kids because across the street, there was a very famous historic peep show. And the marquee would always have
a historic peep show, not just a peep show.
Would always have dirty puns on it. So that was really exciting as a 12-year-old.
Awesome. Well, my favorite moment in Key Arena was circa. What was Jerome James last year as a member of the Sonics?
05.
So it must have been during that season. I was covering the Cavs. The Cavs were in town, and at the time, the beat writers sat on the court on the baseline right next to the visitor's bench. And I was sitting the closest seat to the actual basket. And Jerome James, as he is known to do, got into foul trouble early in the game. Then he got his second foul called on him 3 or 4 minutes in. And I was looking down at my laptop. Back then, we didn't really take our laptops out to the court that often, except for when we were on the West Coast, because we had to file our stories immediately after the game ended. And Jerome James got angry about the foul and got angry that he was in foul trouble and was getting pulled out. And he threw the ball at the barrier that was like the ad barrier that was in front of me, where, you know, where they would have advertising. But it didn't hit the ad barrier. It hit me in the face. And I didn't see it coming, and it clocked me in the face. And I remember looking over at the Cavs bench and sitting in the last seat in the Cavs bench, may he rest in peace, was Robert Tractor Trailer, who was laughing so hard at me that he fell out of his chair onto the ground. And Jerome James was called for a technical foul, and LeBron took the free throw, and he missed it. And after the game, I said, I cannot believe I literally took one for the team, and you didn't even make the freaking free throw. So that is my
What
Seattle.
Did Jerome James say to you? Anything?
Oh, he like overnight that night, he called and apologized. And I swear to God, I think he was at a club.
I'm sure he was.
I got the voicemail, cause I had turned my phone to silent. And, when I woke up in the morning, I had an apology, and it was like loud pulsing music in the background, him apologizing for hitting me in the face. So, yeah.
Well,
so,
you did better than, there was a Lakers reporter, I forget who, but, someone had a laptop destroyed when Shaq went over that barrier and went into the media section in a game.
You're lucky it was only the laptop that was destroyed.
Right.
Oh my God. Andrew, you're a big fan of Sunbasket. Am I correct in saying that?
I am a big fan of Sunbasket. I moved in the off season, and somehow I didn't tell Sunbasket, but they somehow figured it out, and the boxes are arriving to my new place, and I'm delighted because that means that I get to eat that day.
Let me just say, you're not good at laundry.
Not good at laundry.
That I can verify, because you get down to the end of the laundry cycle and you kind of show up in some weird stuff.
That's when like the tuxedos come out and maybe I'm mixing and matching pajamas and suit jackets. Yeah.
I've seen it. You know, you think he's making a joke, but I've seen it. And cooking.
It's called fashion, Brian.
Right. You're fashion forward or something like that. Sunbasket has 18 different weekly recipes, which is more options than ever for Andrew Hahn. Andrew, what are some of your favorite ones?
Let's see. What did I have? They had Korean barbecue skewers 1 week, and they had something called harissa, which I didn't really know what it is, and I still don't know what it is, so I'm not going to bother to explain it, but like SoCal fish tacos, that was really good.
I think harissa is a Middle Eastern dish.
I mean, if it is a Middle Eastern dish, then you can tweet Brian at Windhorst ESPN. Is that your handle? Let him know what harissa is.
Did you know that with Sunbasket you can get paleo, gluten-free, lean and clean, vegan, Mediterranean, and family options, none of which I subscribe to? And even more. There's something for every healthy journey and every busy lifestyle. So go to sunbasket.com/hoop today to learn more and get $35 off your first order. That's sunbasket.com/hoop for $35 off and to eat and live like Andrew Hahn. And he is one of America's leading influencers. Sunbasket.com/hoop. We're talking about the Eastern Conference, looking ahead to the season, starting here in a few days. And we'll start at the top, I guess, with where the GMs and the odds makers have the team that everybody expects to win the East to take over the Cavs title, although the Cavs are not vacating it just yet. The Boston Celtics, who the Westgate Superbook has over under of 59.5 wins. And Kevin, let me ask you this about the Celtics. We know that Kyrie said that he intends to sign with the Celtics next summer, and that makes sense on a number of different reasons. One, it takes the pressure off of him getting the questions this year. Two, they can pay him the most money. And three, it's not binding. So he gets adulation, and even if he changes his mind, I mean, you know, it doesn't really cost him anything. Do you think that the Celtics are prepared to pay Kyrie Irving $200 million next year? I know this is not a preview of this season. I'm just asking because it's on my mind.
I think so. I mean, you know, for all the talk during the playoffs about, you know, what if they just trade Kyrie and make Terry Rozier the point guard after he played so well in that run. I mean, when you got into the meat of the Eastern Conference Finals, at some point the Celtics started having a difficult time scoring, particularly on the road. And, you know, in those situations, that's where Kyrie's value is well established. Like, we know what he can do at the very biggest stage in terms of his ability to create shots. And, you know, the previous incarnations of this podcast have not always been the most kind to Kyrie Irving. And, I think that, But the, most of those criticisms were about, you know, his defense and how he played during the regular season. And he solved all of that last year. He was a key cog in what was the league's best defense while he was healthy. So, yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, I think that if Kyrie is willing to commit, that I don't think there's any hesitation from the Celtics standpoint. And also, you know, look, he's still tradable once he signs that contract. Like, he's not going to lose his value.
Yeah, I feel like just because of the injury history, that's why. But it's a flush market next year. So obviously Kyrie could get maxes in a lot of different places. So probably it's not much of a choice, but I just know the Celtics, you know, there have been players in the past who've counted their max contracts before they had arrived in the Celtics. Nick, what's your viewpoint, what the Celtics got going? They've obviously got a lot of depth. They got a lot going for them this year.
I love the Celtics, B. I mean, this team, having watched them a fair amount last season, they know exactly what they're doing on the floor. Brad Stevens has them in the right positions repeatedly on the defensive end. And they really seem to trust one another no matter who's out there. It reminds me, frankly, of like watching the Patriots. You know the system works. And you know, aside from maybe taking Tom Brady out of things, but even when Matt Cassel was in there, years ago, they still found ways to win games. No matter who is on the floor, you know that they're going to find a way to either win or be real close in the end. And the fact that that depleted team took LeBron and the Cavs to 7 games and lost at home, I mean, that tells you all you need to know in my mind as far as the East goes as we open things up this year. If somehow Kyrie and Gordon Hayward and that roster stays healthy, I don't see anybody this season being able to take them over. But this ties into what we were discussing earlier. If you're the Celtics, yes, you sign Kyrie to that deal because he's proven to be that kind of player. But I would be terrified of investing that much money just because of all the knee issues and the injury concerns moving forward. If you told me that Kyrie could play 70 games and be ready for the playoffs, then absolutely. I mean, this is the team to beat for certain. But given the last few years, I just don't know how that's a real safe bet.
Yeah, I think we'll see how the Celtics start, because they're going to have to work into some new roles a little bit. And I know that there's a lot of excitement about Gordon Hayward coming back, but, you know, I just remember when Paul George first came back from that injury, and even though he's a full year off of it, whereas George was like 9 months or so, or 10 months off of, well, yeah, it was actually more like maybe 11 months, but I don't remember exactly. But whatever it was, I remember Paul struggled a little bit at the start. So I'm not expecting to see all-star level Gordon Hayward come out of there, come bouncing out mid-October. But, and you know, Jaylen Brown, I think, is a guy who's going to have to change his role a lot. He really benefited, you know, in quotes from, Hayward's injury last year in terms of his role and his position within the offense. And you know, to me, like, that team should run through Jason Tatum. And, I mean, he to me is the top end talent on the roster. And, you know, we'll see how that plays with Kyrie, who has his hands on the controls. And a lot, especially early to midseason last year, was Kyrie running the show with everybody else supporting him. So that'll be interesting. But I agree with you guys. I think that they're loaded. My favorite thing about them is kind of the different ways that they can play. They can play big. You know, they can put Aaron Baines in there and have him bruise around and put Horford a power forward. They can play small with an all-wing lineup and all-switch lineup because Horford is very versatile defensively. They can put out a great defensive lineup. They can put out more of a speed lineup. I mean, they can play Rozier and Kyrie together even in certain circumstances. Then they can play rugged with Marcus Smart. I just think that to be a championship team, you got to have sort of 3 or 4 pitches. And that was one of the reasons why, you know, LeBron's been so successful, because he's such a versatile player. He can play so many different positions. His teams can play a lot of different ways. And so I think that's one of Boston's great assets going forward to the season.
Hey, Brian, can I ask you something?
Yes, Andrew Hahn.
Oh, well, I'm going to ask you 2 questions now. So Boston has the highest over-under win total, according to Vegas, in the Eastern Conference. Do you agree that they are the Eastern Conference favorites?
I do, but I do not think it's the, I don't think it's the spread is as big as Vegas and the GMs. The GMs had them 90% to win the East, is. I feel like, the Raptors, who are 55.5 over under, are a serious threat to them if they meld together and they get a great Kawhi season. And those are two ifs. I agree. And we didn't even talk about the Wolves yet, or the Wolves, the Sixers yet. You know, I think teams, I think sleeping on the Raptors is a mistake.
You mentioned Kawhi. So my other question was, is Kyrie the best player in the Eastern Conference now? Cause the former best player is not, he's not in there anymore. So who is it?
I don't think Kyrie is the best player on his team. I mean, I think Jason Tatum impressed me so much last year, and I have just high expectations. You know, I've heard about his off-season regimen. Kevin, who do you think is the best player in the Celtics, and who do you think is the best player in the East?
I mean, I think it is probably still Kyrie until further notice, but it's reasonable to think that Tatum could ascend to that level this year. I think at this point the best player in the East is either Giannis or Kawhi if healthy. I mean, you know, I think Giannis is going to have a season that where he is very much in the MVP conversation, if not wins the award.
Yes, your thoughts on that were on the record when we did our NBA rank special, where you favored having Giannis ranked the same as Durant, and I think maybe even felt like he could have been ranked higher than Durant.
Yeah, I mean, it really just depends all on the frame, you know, whether you're, if you're talking about it in the context of the regular season, I think there's little question in my mind that Giannis is going to have the better regular season than Kevin Durant. Now, in the playoffs, we haven't yet seen that because Giannis hasn't advanced past the first round. And I don't want to get into the Bucks section, but I think there's a chance for him to have a longer playoff run this year and maybe make that kind of impact. But obviously what KD has done in the finals the last couple of years, like at that level, There's no question that he's not only, you know, better of those two players, but, you know, other than LeBron, it's hard to make a case for almost anyone.
We don't have to follow we don't have to follow linear fashion. I'm the boss. We can talk about the Bucks here. Their over under is 48, which is healthy. Nick, you spent a lot of time with the Bucks last year. I felt like there were a lot of games, that could have been 50-50, that were 50-50 games for the Bucks. Clearly, a bunch of games in that Celtics series were 50-50 games that could have gone either way. The Celtics ended up getting the two that were the most important, in 1-4-3. With Mike Budenholzer as the coach, I feel like he can be a difference maker in some of those 50-50 games. I mean, what's your outlook on what you think the Bucks have?
Yeah, it's better than Joe Prunty and Jason Kidd.
No offense to Joe Prunty. I mean, I think Joe Prunty is a top line assistant coach, but I don't think that their coaching was outstanding at times last year.
Yeah, I mean, this team, I watched them a whole lot last season, and the thing that would scare me isn't that they're still on the rise with Giannis, because I'm with KP. I wouldn't put him ahead of Kevin Durant by any stretch right now, but Giannis is incredible. Incredible. And if he learns to shoot consistently, the sky really is the limit. And if you get that narrative behind him in a new arena this season, then yeah, I think he's got a legit MVP chance if he can show that the other facets of his game are developing. But as far as the Bucks go, the thing that really concerns me, and this is the difference with Bud and some of the pieces that they added, like Lopez and bringing back Ilyasova, the roster guys just isn't very good. And that was the issue last season to me. I am not a fan of Eric Bledsoe. I watched him make far too many bad decisions at various points and not get the ball into Giannis at critical times because he thought he could take over and win the game. That is not a recipe for success. I am a huge fan of Chris Middleton. I think he is a really, really good player who on a different team outside of the Giannis spotlight would get even more respect throughout the country. And if he played
Dante DiVincenzo?
Not yet. Not yet. But, you know, we got to see how these new moves play out. I'm just telling you, you know, they're waiting on guys like Thon Maker. Dellavedova was hurt and didn't really do much last season. I don't see it from the rest of that group. If you told me Giannis and Middleton were going to stay healthy, then, yeah, I think they were going to be right around that 48-win total. But they need other guys on the roster to help out more consistently to think they're going to make any noise in the playoffs. And I don't care who your coaches be. If you don't have enough talent on that roster, you're not going to be able to do what you want to do when all the chips are down.
Well, Brogdon was injured a lot of last year. They didn't have the same Brogdon, and that was a factor. But I kind of agree. You know, Middleton is their second best player. But, you know, they don't really have a whole, you don't look at the team and go, man, they got four or five, you know, guys. Like if you look at Boston and you say, man, they got four or five guys at any one time. It's a fair point. Kevin, how do you feel about them?
So to Nick's point, I had a conversation with an executive in the league last spring where, you know, he felt the coaching was getting too much of the blame and the roster wasn't getting enough of the blame, and that, you know, coaching change might not make the difference because of, you know, all the things that Nick outlined. Now, I do feel better about their roster this year, and the single biggest reason for that is Brook Lopez.
Dante DiVincenzo?
not DiVincenzo. He looked really rusty the other night when they saw them against Chicago, when they looked fabulous. But Lopez, you know, now they don't have to rely on Thon Maker or John Henson or Tyler Zeller or the other, you know, I mean, flotsam that was floating through the center position last year. They've got a legitimate NBA center now. And, you know, there are going to be matchups where I think Lopez is going to have a tough time staying on the floor in the playoffs. And, you know, maybe that's when we see the Giannis at center lineup again. And the other concern I would say I have about this team is the depth, because, you know, Brogdon's now starting at the two. If he goes down, the rotation behind him, you got Pat Connaughton, who is a useful player, but there's not great depth there. But, you know, watching them play with more shooting with Brogdon and Lopez out there in Bud's system, it's probably unfair to judge them on that preseason game because they were playing the Bulls, whose defense is atrocious, but it looked like everything you'd want to see out of a team with Giannis and those players around him.
Okay, so let's go a little bit east to Philly before we talk about Toronto. By the way, well, it doesn't matter. I'll be too late by this time, but I just watched the highlights from J.J. Redick going 10 for 10 from the field in China, second game in China. I'll be looking forward to McMahon's coverage of that one.
Did McMahon put his hand over his face again while that was happening?
Like in Houston last year? I don't know. Yeah. I'll have to see. I'll check the tape. Vegas says Philly at 53.5 over-under. They have a couple of injuries already. This team just can't stay healthy. Wilson Chandler is out for a while. I mean, it feels to me like Wilson Chandler is always hurt. I don't know. Maybe that's not fair, but it just feels to me like he's always hurt. He's already dealing with a hamstring issue, and Jared Bayless, who practically was hurt all of last year, is he out indefinitely? I can't remember exactly what the time frame on that was.
Whether he's healthy or not, he's out indefinitely.
Well, that's true. So you know, this is obviously a team that finished last season on a 16-game winning streak. I think they were 27-5 down the stretch. They, you know, if you draw the box the last 35 games, I think they had the best record in the NBA. Disappointed against the Celtics in the playoffs, but they got a lot going for them. I would just say that, you know, it wasn't a make or break summer for them because they were able to sort of roll their cap over. They got J.J. Redick to take another 1-year deal. They used some cap space on Wilson Chandler, and he's expiring, and so is Jared Bayless. So they will open some cap space again in a better market next summer. But they had a great opportunity to improve this team this summer, and I don't know, maybe they would argue with me that they did, because they would say, well, they got Chandler, I think, for a second round. They got Chandler and a second round pick, is that right? Like, they would maybe argue.
Right, yeah.
That was a good trade. I had high hopes for them this summer, and so they're essentially bringing back the same core. Chandler being the addition there. And then obviously you have Markelle Fultz, who was only sort of on the team in name only. So he's sort of almost like a value add, to the team. So, Kevin, your viewpoint on where this team's going to be.
I think you're right. If you think this team is going to be better this year, it's going to be because of internal development. And, you know, well, part of that is probably an additional year of experience for Simmons and Embiid. They already were quite good last year. So I think the biggest source of that is going to be Markelle Fultz in his second season. He's starting right now alongside those two guys in place of Redick, who's coming off the bench at this point. They seem committed to that lineup. And, you know, Fultz, his form is still not where it was at Washington, where he shot a good percentage from three, although he didn't shoot great from the free throw line, which tends to be an important indicator of how you're going to shoot threes in the NBA as well. But he's at least taking them. He made one the other night. That was exciting to see. And
you know, yeah, that was big news.
It really was. He gives them another dimension with his size out there. You know, they'll have no one shorter than 6'6" in that starting lineup if they go with it. And, you know, just a tremendous amount of versatility defensively. And then he also gives them a dynamic playmaker in a way that in some ways even Ben Simmons is not, since he's not really a pick and roll player the way that Fultz is.
Nikki?
I'm not buying this 76ers group at all, guys.
Damn, he just threw down the gauntlet.
At all. I don't think they have enough in late game situations in the playoffs right now with this same group to think that they're going to be able to take any kind of big step this season.
They were 27-5. I know that it's dangerous to only look at the last part of a season when not every team is trying. But
especially the teams on their schedule.
That's true.
But Take-a-thon deluxe, baby.
I know, but that's almost half the season. It's a pretty, yeah. It's a significant, you know, sample.
That's a half season of tanking. Come on now.
I mean, would we consider them making? Would we consider them making the conference finals a big step? I mean, I think that's realistic. I don't know if
that's
likely.
That's kind of what their goal would be, you know, and they're going to have to probably beat at least one really good team to get there. By the way, they also have their rookie Zaire Smith. I think that, am I pronouncing that right?
Like Zaire.
Zaire. He's also out with a Jones fracture. Not that he would have gotten a lot of time, just when I was mentioning their injuries. Not that he would have gotten a lot of playing time, but, you know, look, to me, another thing that I like about them, they can play a lot of different ways. They can play really big. They can play really small. Ben Simmons is, I don't regret my vote for Ben Simmons Rookie of the Year for 1 second, even though he was outplayed postseason by Donovan Mitchell. I feel like he's a perennial all-star, and I think he will be a driver for this team. And I think Fultz can only get better. I don't think they're a championship team. In my mind, they're behind the Raptors and the and Vegas too. Vegas has them behind. They have 53.5 over under. As I said earlier, that's you know, I had them third in the East, and I think they probably think that they should have every chance to win. I still think they're a really good team, and if there's an injury somewhere else or there's something goes their way, they could slip through and win the East.
Yeah, but speaking of injuries, are we sure that Embiid has turned the corner here? That Embiid can stay healthy over the course of a full season and play back-to-backs and be that same player night in, night out?
No, but I'm not convinced about Kawhi or Kyrie either. You know, so.
Well, but here's the difference. The Celtics don't need Kyrie until the postseason. The Celtics have more than enough to get them to a point where they're fine in the regular season. If the Raptors lose Kawhi, forget it.
True.
Boston is so loaded on that roster as we start this season that they should just be extraordinarily cautious with Kyrie until they need him the most. If Philly loses Embiid, I mean, that team They are done.
Don't you think Philly's primed to make a trade at some point, Kevin? And I was, I understand why they're not going whole hog for Jimmy Butler, because the ask might be one of their valuable players. But, you know, they have an extra, player or two. And, you know, I think they could potentially improve if they really want to go for it this year, if they smell that they can.
For sure, yeah. I mean, they have the guys we talked about as being injured earlier, both Bayless and Chandler are on expiring contracts that are kind of right in that size where you could pretty easily match salary if someone wants to completely get off a bunch of salary, or if you just want to go like expiring contract and a draft pick for a better player on an expiring contract. And that way you still have the flexibility for free agency this summer, but you're also better positioned for the stretch run.
Right. They also have a guy like Dario Saric, who a lot of people like in the league and value a lot. And, you know, yes, they value him too, but he's not one of their two best players. And if they could get another, a third big three guy in there next to Embiid and Simmons by including Saric in a deal, they'd have to consider it. Yes, Andrew Hahn.
I don't know if you heard, but Philadelphia had some GM problems towards the end of last season. And they have a new general manager in Elton Brand there now. Is that probably a limiting factor in their ability to upgrade in season?
Well, I think it affected what they did this summer. You know, they really were not able to get anything of note done this summer. And we'll never know if Brian Colangelo was still there. Would they have been able to close a deal with one of the free agents, or would they have been able to make a move? We just won't know. But I know that it, you know, I had high expectations for them this summer, and they were not able to make a major move. And their timeline in with the way they handled their GM search was very odd. It's very unusual to hire a GM on the eve of training camp. And what it appears that they've done here is they've sort of straddled the line. They didn't want to hire. They didn't want to have Brett Brown be their GM because, or president or what have you, because they know that that's not a good formula, that it almost never works, and we've seen it fail.
You don't think it's working in Minnesota, B?
Well, I mean, I said the other day on this pod, you know, who started it? It was Doc, right? Who started and got both titles?
Yep. He got both checks.
He got both checks for sure. There was some incredible chatter in the league I won't even say it. Let's just say that some people have thought that Doc made out better than just about anybody in the league over the last few years. but, you know, Doc started it, and then we had Flip Saunders, who passed away, and Thibodeau replaced him there, and, you know, Budenholzer. Stan Van, and there's one more I'm forgetting. It was a gang of five. But here we are, and, you know, I don't know how long Tibbs is going to hold on to it, and it's still going to be Greg Popovich who's able to do it the best. But what they did was they basically hired a quote-unquote weak GM. You know, if you go across the league, there's strong GMs and weak GMs. Sometimes GMs matriculate from strong to weak or weak to strong. And so they could have gone out and hired a more powerful name that would have challenged Brett Brown in terms of control, in terms of who had a stronger voice. And they elected to go with a young, up-and-coming guy who may end up being a fabulous executive down the line, but is not going to really probably challenge Brett Brown too much. So, and I like Brett Brown a lot, but he was a guy whose grip on his job wasn't too strong a couple of years ago, and all of a sudden now he's the most powerful guy in the franchise. It's just interesting the way it goes. And frankly, if I was a 76ers fan, I wouldn't care who was the GM, just as long as some more talent got brought in. And I would say that over the last few years, that has not been tremendous decision-making by the front office. The Fultz pick, the Fultz swap did not come off smelling like a rose, at least early on. And when that Sacramento pick transfers to Boston, and it could be as high as two, it could look even worse. And so they just haven't been able. I mean, Brian Colangelo got there. Correct me if I'm wrong. He didn't draft Ben Simmons. He drafted Ben Simmons, right?
He did draft Ben.
Well, then I have to amend that a little bit. But he drafted Ben Simmons because the team was set up to lose before he got there.
But it was a question mark at that point. I mean, there were people who thought Ingram was the better of the two prospects, and you know, well, he's promising. I don't think anyone would say that now.
Well, my point is, I don't think that they've taken the step forward after the draft to elevate themselves on a higher level. So, that'll be the pressure for Elton Brand and Brett Brown to figure out how to do that. But all right, so let's talk about Toronto. Let's see, what does Vegas have them at?
55.5
second best win prediction in the East. I think this is a really good team. And caveat that Kawhi has to be himself, but I see, again, tremendous flexibility with their lineup. I think we're going to see the emergence of OG Anunoby. He was one of the best rookies last year. Didn't get a whole lot of attention just because of the nature of the already great rookie class and that he played in Toronto. If I was San Antonio, I would have prioritized getting OG Anunoby. The fact that they were able to keep him out of that deal, I think, was a victory for the Raptors. I think he can play, he can defend probably about 70% of the league effectively. You put him next to Kawhi, you put him next to a very versatile guy in Pascal Siakam, who's very, very versatile defensively. You look at Fred VanVleet, who can play multiple positions, really came into his own last year. You know, Kyle Lowry is still an all-star, level player. I just love the defensive intensity and flexibility on this roster.
Any concerns, guys, about Nick Nurse? Nick Nurse is this, you know, lifelong assistant who moves down into a team that, you know, could conceivably go to the finals.
Yeah.
What is the concern level?
He just replaced
the coach of the year.
Dwayne
Casey. I mean, how concerned should a Toronto fan be that here's this guy who seemingly come out of nowhere to replace the coach of the year on a team that's expected to contend for a finals berth?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they would have made the same move if they knew they were going to get Kawhi, you know, a couple months later. I mean, the job sort of like, you know, I think Brian may have made this comparison in the past. It's sort of like when David Blatt was hired before the Cavs got LeBron, and the job changed a little bit. But, you know, I think the big difference here is Nick Nurse has been around this group of guys. He's, you know, proven what he can do, and he, you know, I think probably rightfully gets a lot of credit for the way that second unit played last year, where they shot a ton of threes, got to the basket, almost nothing in the mid-range, and if you look at the Raptors so far in the preseason, that's how the whole team has been playing. And, you know, obviously trading DeMar DeRozan is a big part of that, although Kawhi, you know, does have a tendency to shoot some pull-up, you know, jumpers in isolation, some of those long twos. But I think that's going to be...
Isn't he maybe the league leader in pull-up threes?
Yeah, he shoots a lot. I mean, Harden's the leader.
Oh,
in that,
right,
I think, but
right, right.
He's in there. He was 2 years ago. And, you know, that the thing I love about this team is the number of wings they have. That's the most difficult position to get in the modern NBA. You mentioned...
Right, I didn't even mention Danny Green and CJ Miles.
Nope. Yeah. And DeLon Wright is in that mix. Like,
right.
They've just got so many options if they're going small. And I think that's what's really going to be an advantage for them. So I'm looking forward to next week when our Eastern Conference picks come out, and there's going to be a sea of Boston logos on that page and just that one little Toronto logo next to
them. Oh, look at you. So,
KP.
So now, is this the Shaney method, or is this just is this your computer saying this, or is this your viewpoint?
I mean, they are tops in the real plus minus projections that I do using our system that developed by Jerry Engelman. But I think beyond that, you know, it's like, look, I get the whole Toronto in the playoffs thing, but number one, that was against LeBron, and he's not there anymore. And number two,
I heard.
I think a lot of that was, yeah, they got reported. Number two, I think a lot of that was DeRozan, quite frankly. I mean, they were at their best in last year's series against Cleveland in games where DeRozan got benched in the fourth quarter. And he's phenomenal in the regular season, helped them win a lot of games. You know, Kawhi will have to be healthy for them to be as good during the regular season. But I think that is a massive, massive upgrade in terms of star talent. And a case, you know, a situation where previously they were coming up short against Cleveland in particular. But now I think they go into any series in the East, if Kawhi's healthy, at least on par and probably with the better team.
They're actually kind of built. So, you know, Nick was talking about Nick Nurse being a high level assistant. He was a head coach in the D League for the Rio Grande Vipers. Is it Rio Grande or Rio Grande?
Rio. Yeah, we've been having pronunciation problems today.
You sound. I know that the people are going to make fun of me and say I'm an asshole for saying that, but in Ohio, there's actually a college that's on the river that's spelled R-I-O and they pronounce it Rio. So that's where that came from. So I know that was just a brain fart by me. So basically they played down there the same way that the Rockets were playing up in Houston, and that's the way Nick, I think, did they win a D-League title? I think, did Nick lead them to a D-League title? I can't remember, but
did that change your opinion of him?
I'm just saying.
The 2011 D-League title.
Right, so, playing in, you know, and really that was even more of an incubator back then for the way Daryl Morey wanted to play than the way the Rockets eventually started playing now, which was high tempo layups and three pointers. And so this is how Nick Nurse believes the game should be played. This is basically a branch of the Rockets tree. And, with a whole bunch of wings, they're kind of built like the Rockets were to try to deal with the Warriors in a strength. I mean, they don't get the credit for being constructed that way, but that's how they've been constructed. And when they traded DeMar, they traded him for two, really good defensive wings. Although I guess Danny Green's defense may have, you know, is it slightly down from where it was in recent years, Kevin? But still,
I think a half step down.
I know his 3-point shooting is down. I mean, I always think of Danny Green in the 2014 finals where the dude like didn't touch the rim on a 3-pointer. I always think of him like that. His career percentages actually aren't that sterling, but
We were so close to Danny Green Finals MVP.
Oh man, he was tracking. He was tracking. Instead, it went to his teammate Kawhi.
No, that was the year they lost, wasn't it?
No,
13 was the year I thought that he made all the threes.
Maybe my memory is really going, but I thought it was 14. He couldn't miss. I don't think any of the Spurs missed very much. True. In 2014. So anyway, I mean, it's going to be interesting. I mean, Nick, you bring up a really good point. Is, you know, all the cards are on the table for the Raptors this year. I mean, you know, Kyle Lowry is not getting any younger. Serge Ibaka is not getting any younger, and they have to do really well to keep Kawhi interested. Maybe you don't want to have a rookie head coach at the controls. It's not an ideal situation. That said, I think Nick Nurse is, you know, I understand why they made the bet. It's interesting. This is Masai's first head coach hire. He's been a GM, man, for almost, what, maybe 8 or 9 years. This is the first coach that he hired. He's sticking his neck out a little bit to fire Dwayne Casey to hire Nick Nurse. But I kind of think it's kind of the same scenario about why the Raptors ended up benching DeMar at the end of a couple of those games in the conference. Well, it was the conference semifinals, but against the Cavs, because the numbers and everything and their research said that DeMar, you know, they were better when with him on the bench. And I think, you know, it took Dwayne Casey to stick his neck out to bench DeMar because he was the right thing for the organization. Well, you know, Masai believes the right thing for the organization was to make this change, to promote the assistant off of the best team in Raptors history, regular season at least. I respect the hustle. I think one of the things that Masai has is that he knows if Kawhi walks, this team is still positioned to build for the future. They're still young, and they can position themselves. But I actually think that they are primed to make an in-season trade as well. Like, let's say the Jimmy Butler situation doesn't get resolved, and he's still available in a couple of months. They have the assets to pull it off. And, you know, and especially if they're going to go all in, I wouldn't rule out them trying to look for a deal like that.
That team would be fun to watch defensively with Kawhi and Jimmy together, trying to lock down any wing out there. I mean, that would be a hell of a lot of fun to see them going against the Golden State in this case.
It'd be a hell of a gamble with both of them being free agents. But.
Well, and that's why I understand what Masai's going for in this sense, too, though, B, because, yeah, you've got these younger pieces and they could rebuild, although if you go and trade for Jimmy in this dream scenario for Toronto, you're going to obviously give up a few of those pieces. But if it doesn't work, you can hit the button. And that's what we've seen so many times in the last few years in this league. You've got teams that are going for it all, or you've got teams that are going to press the button on the rebuild. So Toronto is setting themselves up to either make the finals and push Golden State, assuming they're healthy, or it all falls apart and you can hit the button and start fresh in a new season and take a lot of that pressure, in this case, off Nick Nurse in his second year.
All right, now we come to maybe the team I'm most anxious to see what happens with in the East. Do you want to guess who it is?
Detroit.
Wizards?
Negative. Andrew Hahn?
The Heat.
No.
Oh, I don't know.
The Pacers of Indiana.
What?
The Indiana Pacers.
Wow.
That's right. Guys, I think this team is going to be good. Really good.
So over 48 wins good?
I kind of think so. Is that what their number is, 48?
That's
yeah,
what their number is from Vegas right now.
I kind of think so, yeah. You know, there's a couple of question marks. You know, they paid Tyreek Evans. I guess it's a shorter deal, but they really paid Tyreek Evans. You know, Tyreek Evans had a great year last year. I have to admit, you know, Kevin, I'll defer to you because I'm sure you know more about this, than me. I didn't watch a lot of Grizzlies action last year. But boy, Tyreek Evans had a really good year and they added him. I think they overpaid for Doug McDermott. But nonetheless, he's on the roster.
Take Fink out of that, please. They overpaid for Doug. I really like Doug, but Mark Bartlestein strikes again there, baby. Wow.
But and they also got Kyle O'Quinn, who I like. I mean, I liked their moves in the offseason were low key impressive, to me. And guys, they should have beat the Cavs in the playoffs last year. Oladipo was the real deal, two-way dominating player. I couldn't believe how good Bojan Bogdanović played. I can't believe it would carry over. But, you know, Domantas Sabonis fits into exactly what they want. And, you know, we'll see if Miles Turner extends before October 15th deadline. I don't know if he will or not. I haven't seen a lot of reporting on it, and I don't really have any insight. But let's just say for the sake of my point here that he doesn't extend. You're going to have Thaddeus Young and Miles Turner playing on and I think Bogdanović and Darren Collison all playing in contract years. I think it's primed for there to be – I just think that they're a sneaky team. I think they're very well coached. I think they've been smartly put together. And I really like their offseason. Guys, what do you think?
The thing I liked about the offseason is, you know, they could have said, we had this great year, we surprised everyone, let's run it back. And they weren't content to do that. I mean, they did bring back Bogdanović and Collison, who had non-guarantees, Collison in particular being at a really good number for them. But, you know, now they can have, as you mentioned, the benefit of not extending Turner is his cap hit's going to be relatively low next summer. So they're looking at, you know, you could have the core of Turner and Oladipo and Sabonis and have max money next year. Not that, you know, Indiana is a destination for free agents, but, you know, that's great flexibility. Or you could decide to run it back at that case and re-sign those guys. I thought it was a great number for them, for Evans. If I were running the Lakers, he would have been my number one target after signing LeBron. I thought he was a perfect fit for there because not only can he handle the ball and, you know, play point guard a little bit if you need him to, as he has early in his career, he's also become a really good spot-up three-point shooter and someone you have to defend out there. So I think he's a great fit either, you know, playing with Oladipo or kind of running the show with that second unit. Didn't love the McDermott contract for all the reasons we went into, but
they needed shooting.
Yes,
but
and they got it in both McDermott
for $22 million.
Hey yeah. Man, I don't know what to tell you. I live in Omaha, Nebraska.
Yeah, I know what to tell you. Don't do it.
they loved it out here. I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, I bet they did. I bet they did.
I still don't think this team is going to be. Yeah, go for it, Nick.
Well, I was going to say, I see the Pacers, and the only thing that scares me is it seems like the hype train for this team is off the charts. And maybe it's the old Vegas and me, guys, and losing so much money out there with Mr. Han. But when everybody's jumping in on, oh, man, this team's going to be great, this team's going to be great, they're ready to take the next step, that's when I start to go, wait a minute. Did they just get hot last year? And did they get to a place where they just overachieved a little bit? And I'm not certain that Oladipo can be that superstar player that he showed at various points last season and certainly in that playoff series against LeBron. I mean, this goes back to the trainer sending out that Instagram right after that Cavs series ended. Oh, man, he's ready to get even better. And that's all well and good. And I like the pieces they have in place, but I'm with you. I mean, sometimes you get one of these teams that overachieves one season, and everybody wants to anoint them the next year. And for whatever reason, whether it's the talent just isn't the same or isn't playing as well together or injuries, it just seems like they're never able to live up to expectations. So
even if Oladipo is the same player as he was last year.
I mean, look, the optimism, I see why people would have it. I understand why you would have it be. But the Pacers, as far as a team that can really challenge in the East and make noise to a point where you think they have a legitimate chance at the end, I don't see that from them this season.
I think,
all right, you're on the record.
I think Collinger used to call it a consolidation year when you have those young teams that really make noise the year before and then they take kind of a step back the following year. They have the same win total at 48. Do you still prefer Indiana over to make some noise? Like, do you prefer them over Milwaukee?
Well, I wish I was getting better odds on Indiana, but the sheet I'm looking at here, all the odds are -110. So I would like the Pacers to be more underrated. The odds being the same, I would probably. No, forget it. I'm taking the Pacers, taking the over. I'll take the over on the Pacers.
Okay.
Wizards. Fascinating team yet again. Their number is 45. I don't know what to think of this team, guys. You know, to me, I feel like I'm saying the exact same thing about them that I said last year, which is that a lot of it, they really need Otto Porter to show up as a $100 million player. I don't know if he can be. I think he's the swing player. I'm not 100% convinced of his health. He's had these hip issues. I just don't think that Dwight Howard is a difference maker. I could be wrong. Maybe I am wrong. I know Jeff Green isn't a difference maker. He'll help you some days and he'll hurt you others. Their other big move in the offseason was, Austin Rivers. What do you think about? You think that makes any difference for them, Kevin?
I mean, I think we can talk about all these other moves, and I will defend Otto Porter, who I think fits into that group where, you know, he is a really good 3-and-D role player, and you know, you put him in a setting
million.
In the playoffs. Yeah, I mean, that's the going rate these days. Would you rather have Chandler Parsons at that amount?
No, fair point.
I think this season really hinges on John Wall more than anything. Like, he wasn't healthy last year. He wasn't very effective last year. And, you know, if he's back to that John Wall of 2 years ago, where he's getting to the basket all the time and is this explosive, dominant athletic force, then, you know, I think they got a chance to pay me, maybe contend for home court again. But if he struggles like he did last year, then I think the rest is kind of window dressing.
I look at the Wizards, and the only words that come into my brain are same old story. Oh, what's going to happen this year with John Wall and Beal and Porter? We know what's going to happen. They're not good enough. This team is never good enough. You spent all this money on these guys together.
They're just not good enough.
If you're running the Wizards, you hit the button, because this team, as it's constructed, will never be what you want it to be. So why continue making these hopes for the future when you know year after year when you watch this group that they are not good enough to make it happen together?
Wow. That's a take right worth there.
Aggregate it.
Is it? Could they hit the button, though? I mean,
well, I you know, John Wall's got one of the largest contracts in NBA history, and I don't think Otto Porter is a plus contract. Bradley Beal, you could certainly move.
Right.
But, you know, I thought Bradley Beal would have been interesting to bring forward in a Kawhi trade. But who knows? All right. Speaking of big numbers, the Miami Heat salary situation. Good God. The Heat have the highest payroll in the NBA. It depends on how much you include Chris Bosh in that. I don't know if it's not, it's obviously not on their books. I realize that, but this is the last year of Chris Bosh. They may have spread it a little bit, but if you take Bosh out, they're I think fifth highest. I mean, the reason I include Chris Bosh is this: when you're the Miami Heat and you're trying to evaluate what you're going to try to trade for Jimmy Butler and evaluate how much you're willing to spend, you have to compute what you owe Chris Bosh. I mean, it may not show up on your NBA books, but that money has to go out. Just keep the, you know, I just, you know, tell you, being around the Heat, you know, they don't love to spend money. And so I just think that's an issue. But what we have with the Heat is a whole bunch of guys. They have, let's see, 6 players making over $12 million this year. Only one of them has ever been an all-star, and that was Goran Dragic, and he was an injury replacement. But okay, he was an all-star. We have a couple of guys who are banged up. Deion Waiters had a very serious foot injury last year. And James Johnson is still not back from off-season hernia surgery, which is alarming. But yet, they have a lot of things going for them in terms of their style of play. And, you know, they have a couple of really nice young players, Josh Richardson and Bam Adebayo being up there. And then, of course, you've got the Dwayne Wade factor, who's on this retirement tour, and I don't know how that's going to figure. It's like the Heat are kind of they can go a lot of different directions here, but really they're just at the end of the day, they're a high-priced average team. And if you're a Heat fan, you're going to love them because they're going to play hard for the most part, and because that's how Eric Spoelstra plays them. But they're still, at the end of the day, a very expensive average team in my mind. Let's see what Vegas has them at. Where are they?
42.5.
So, you know, they're basically calling them a 500 team.
They're a try-hard team with a championship-level payroll, which is a joke.
That's right.
Since when did Pat Riley chase down mediocrity so hard? I mean, that's – when you look at this Miami team, they are the definition of average. This is an average team with an insane payroll. It could go a lot of different directions, sure, but – do any of those directions lead towards the front of the East or close to it? No. So
what
if
they trade for your boy
doing?
Jimmy Butler?
that's not enough. I mean, that's just not enough. That doesn't even put them, I don't believe, in that top tier home court advantage in the East. I mean, Jimmy is a hell of a player, but Jimmy's hurt a month and a half of every season. And then if you're Miami, are you thinking about potentially finding some way somehow to extend him in the summer? I don't like the way that this
roster. That's why they would trade for.
Right. I don't like the way the roster is constructed. I don't see which way they're headed. And even if in this pipe dream, if they can find a way to land Jimmy and what? Like, Jimmy gets you into the postseason for sure. Maybe,
I mean, they're going to make Spoelstra running the show.
Right. But I'm saying with Spoelstra running the show, you know, maybe you get out of the first round, but where are you going? Like, where are you going if you're Miami after all those years of chasing titles? You are chasing the middle right now, and it's stunning the last couple of years.
I'll tell you where they're going.
Watching it unfold.
They're going to the Bahamas in May. Kevin?
I mean, I think that Tyler Johnson contract really kind of messed everything up. It's what forced them to spend so much money because they were like, look, this cap space is going away. We got to use it now or forever hold our peace. And now that the bill is coming due for that with Tyler Johnson.
Oh, it's coming due, baby. It's coming due, baby. Yeah,
making $19 million this season, nearly $20 million the next. Yeah, I agree with Nick that I think even if they get Jimmy Butler, depending on what the parameters of that trade would be, they're probably at best still in that kind of Indiana-Milwaukee tier, hoping to get home court advantage, hoping to get the fourth seed. And I would further say that I think, you know, again, it depends on what the rest of the deal would be. But if you ask me, would you do, if it worked, would you do Josh Richardson for Jimmy Butler straight up? I wouldn't do it because Josh Richardson is on such a nice contract.
Yeah, Tyler Johnson next year is a $19 million player option. You think he's picking that up?
Yeah.
All right. How about the Detroit Pistons? You know, the Pistons really, really, really want to make the playoffs this year. They believe that making the playoffs would be a great accomplishment. Vegas has them at
38.5.
Will the Detroit Pistons make the playoffs?
Yes. All my stock that I bought last year from Mr. Hahn and others went bust. So what am I going to do? I'm running it back, baby. I'm buying it all up as far as over 38.5 in a playoff berth. Because if they stay healthy, which is a key for all these teams, but if this group stays healthy, which includes Reggie Jackson, who was out for several months last year, I think they've got enough certainly to get in the playoffs in the East, and I think they've got enough to get over 38.5. Now, I don't think this team long-term has any chance to contend for a finals berth or anything, but they're going to be better than what they've shown if they can keep their core guys on the floor under Dwayne Casey.
I agree with that. I think, like, first off, if you're going to say they're not going to make the playoffs, well, who else is in the East? And maybe there's another Pacers situation where a team that we're not expecting comes out of nowhere. But you don't look at anyone else on paper and say that they're going to be better than Detroit this year. I mean, you know they're going to defend their asses off under Dwayne Casey. The teams always do that. And I thought a sneaky good signing for them was Glenn Robinson III for, you know, relatively little money. I think he'll be a good wing for them, a bit of an upgrade over James Ennis in that spot last year.
Andre Drummond is shooting threes. You like this?
A lot of guys are shooting threes during the preseason.
Okay, fair point. I don't know where Blake Griffin's head is at. It's kind of a referendum-type season for him. You know, they traded for him in this big splashy move. They didn't make the playoffs. The coach and president got fired. Blake, if you're this guy who's going to lead a team, let's do it. I mean, to me, it's kind of a referendum season on him, on where he is in his career. All right, the Cleveland Cavaliers, four-time defending Eastern Conference champions.
Can they make it number five?
No. Vegas says.
Can they make it to 35?
Vegas says it's not even going to be close to that. The over-under for the Cavs is 31. That is not a playoff team number. The Cavs can go two ways here, and I think they've kind of set themselves up to go one of two ways. They can either play their veteran-type players, the George Hills, J.R. Smiths, Kyle Korver, Tristan Thompson, or they have this cadre of young guys, Colin Sexton, Chetty Osman, Ante Zizic, who else am I forgetting? I know they traded for Sam Decker. I don't know if he's going to get much time. Rodney Hood, Larry Nance. And so to me, I don't think the Cavs would ever announce this, but I do think they would love to make the playoffs. Just for a lot of reasons, even though they have this, their first round pick is top 10 protected. And so I think that the Cavs, if I was guessing, would get to January and see where they are. If they're in 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, I think they keep on keeping on, maybe try to upgrade a little bit. If they're 11, 12, 13, 14, I think maybe they look to see if there's a market to move George Hill, to market to move Kyle Korver. They just don't play J.R. Smith at all, play their younger kids more. And that's what I think their plan is. But they quietly feel like they're going to be a playoff contender. I think I would be inclined to go over 31, but like if the number was like 33 or 34, I would probably say under. So it's probably well positioned, but I kind of think this is a team that's primed to finish ninth. They'll be just good enough to lose a lot of nights, a lot of games where LeBron carried him home last year and won't carry him home this year.
I think they're going to be worse than that. I think, not in terms of the final number, but I think it'll be a season kind of like the Kings last year where they started out with all those veterans.
And, you never want to be compared to the Kings.
We're going to play those guys. And,
never.
No, you really don't. You really don't. but then a couple months into the season, they realize, as you said, this isn't working, and start sitting those guys and start trying to sell off pieces where they can.
Nikki?
I don't understand why in the hell they didn't trade Kevin Love. Explain
to me. Well, they can still trade him. He's still trading.
I know, but what are they doing? They're living in a past that's not there anymore for a future that looks a hell of a lot cloudy to the rest of the world than it does to some of the people in Cleveland.
Well, some of it's asset protection. Kevin could have opted out over this year. He could have probably gotten, if he doesn't get hurt, he was going to get max or near max money. They protect the asset. He was eligible to get a no trade clause and did not, I think he was eligible, right? 8-4, right? Did not get it. So, I don't know. I think it's highly doubtful he will play all 5 years with the Cavs. But
look,
but yes, I will say that it was a bit of a hubris move by the Cavs.
Right. I understand how difficult it is to go through a rebuild. I mean, it's ugly. It's gross. No fan wants to watch it. No executive wants to deal with it. But when the alternative is, oh man, maybe we can run down that 8 seed in the East. Give me a break. Give me a break. Nobody really wants to watch that either. Because that doesn't
help
you.
Well, they do in Detroit. I'm telling you something. They do in Cleveland.
Do they, though? They're not filling that place. They're not filling up Little Caesars
either. They're not watching anything. All right. let's just run through these last teams. Orlando also over under 31. They gave Aaron Gordon $70-some million. I think Mo Bamba could be an interesting guy. He has some Embiid qualities in him. Not really feeling this roster still, Kevin.
Feel the same way. I mean, their point guard rotation is DJ Augustine and Jerian Grant, so that's not inspiring much confidence. Apologies to your hometown Magic, Nick.
Anytime you bring up an ex-Bull, you get his reaction.
I was going to say two ex-Bulls, and it's horrible because this is my team. You guys know this. This was my love growing up. I went with my family to Magic games at the old Orlando Arena, and then when they built this new place, I've gotten to see it over the years. To see how irrelevant this team is, it makes me so sad. And I like John Hammond. I think they're trying to get things together. The Bamba pick could work. Isaac, guys, he's
hurt a lot
last year.
You like the Mozgov acquisition? Timo Mazda?
No, hell no. But that's a whole nother story, and we don't have enough time here. But
don't you remember those days? It's your Orlando Magic. Magic.
Shout out to my man Paul Porter, who I believe is still there as the PA guy. But guys, what in the hell are the Magic doing?
They're trying to trade Nikola Vucevic, but they have been for 4 years.
Yeah, exactly. Right. They're just stuck in place. It's awful. But DJ Augustine and Jaren Grant, oh my God. When those are your point guards to start the season, help, hey, SOS. Andrew. This does not work.
Andrew, watch this trap I'm about to set. Kevin, which contract did you like better, Aaron Gordon or Zach LaVine?
I knew it was coming.
I actually like that Aaron Gordon contract. I think I wish they'd stop trying to play him as a small forward, but I think if they play him as a power forward, he's pretty good.
The Chicago Bulls, I assume they're still quasi-tanking this year, right, Nick? I mean, and they took a blow with Lauri Markkanen with the elbow injury. Listen to this guy.
Wendell Carter,
Rookie of the Year candidate.
I can only imagine, B, that this was your life when you left Cleveland and you went down to Miami, and yet everybody still asks you about Cleveland and what's going on there and what's happening. No matter where I go from now until the end of time, people are going to ask me about the Bulls, and I was around that team for a decade. and what a decade it was. But, man, oh, man.
They were number one seeds in there, sir.
Oh, man, they're not going to play defense. They're not going to play defense. My feelings on the LaVine contract are well documented by
Let's just leave that alone.
Yeah, the issue is, you know, you got Jabari, who you signed for $20 million. Did they watch Jabari last year? I mean, Jabari last year was not very good. And they're thinking, okay, well, maybe Jabari coming home, playing in Chicago, he'll get it together. It was just preseason, but man, he was awful in that game against Milwaukee.
Will he be introduced last? From Chicago!
Well, it was probably going to be Markkanen, but now he's out for 2 months. KP, I feel bad
Wendell
for
Carter.
Wendell Carter is going to be better than people think, but he's still a rookie. But I just feel bad for Fred Hoiberg in this sense. I'd be stunned if Fred is there after the season. I think that all the stars are aligning for this team to just be not very good, which a lot of people expected. But the key for Fred is those checks are still going to cash, and he's made a hell of a lot of money in Chicago, and they just need to figure out which way they're going, because the way
over
they're
under
going
of 30.
Right now.
Over under of 30.
Well, when it was at 27.5, I didn't touch it because I wouldn't.
Yeah, why
touch
did it boost? It opened at 27.5. It's gone to 30. Why?
Come on, you've been around the Chicago fans for a long, long time, Mr. Winhurst. These people vote early and often, and they
These
bet
people.
Early and often.
These people.
And
let's not
and
talk
they
about
go
voting.
Into it.
Let's not talk about voting in Chicago.
But they go into it believing that it's always going to be better than what it appears to be. And my point all along, on top of the fact that they don't play any defense, is that this team is going to get to like midseason. They're not going to be very good, and they're going to go, wait. Let's just tank away like we did last year, line ourselves up for the right pick. And start fresh. So I wouldn't touch that number, but at 30, I'm going under because I don't believe that this team with the offensive talent they have is going to be any good at all defensively. And as our friend Zach Lowe pointed out, just because in theory you're good at offense, it doesn't, or bad at defense,
well, this podcast
doesn't mean you're going to be good at offense.
This podcast is going over at this point. So, we have three tankers in the Hawks, 23.5. They're fully in tank mode. We'll just be real quick here. Will Trae Young finish the top three voting of the Rookie of the Year?
No. I would say no.
No.
Will Luka Doncic make Trae Young look bad all year long?
Yes.
Instead of unfair, but it's probably true. All right, then the two New York teams. The Knicks over-under is 28. By the way, the Hawks is 23.5. I might take the under. The Knicks and Nets. The Nets are not trying to tank. This is actually their highest over-under probably in 3 or 4 years, 32. I don't think they're a playoff team. They were kind of messing around in the Jimmy Butler talks. I have no clue why, unless they were more for the future and they had to spend their money on somebody. At least they've got control of their draft picks back. That's about all I can say about them. The Knicks are tanking, and they should. Their over-under is 28. Kevin Knox, they're going to save. Kevin Knox is somebody to watch this year. They're going to save probably not even play Porzingis. I'm not saying he won't get a handful of games on the court near the end of the season, but it's very clear they're not going to rush him back, and they're going to save their cap space and take their hopeful lottery pick and try to make a run at Durant and others. That's my viewpoint. You have any comments on those two teams before we wrap this up?
I think if anyone's going to make a Pacers like playoff run in the East this year, it would be Brooklyn. I kind of like this roster.
Wow.
Another team.
Wow.
I mean, they don't have the top end talent is not good. If you look at who these teams' best player is, they rank like 28th. But they're pretty deep. I like Ed Davis. So I think DeMar Carroll was good for them. They could be decent, but they also might sell everybody off at the trade deadline.
Their best player is Spencer Dinwiddie.
Who's not even started.
Who the Bulls cut for R.J. Hunter. Please remember.
It was not a good decision.
But
you honestly believe that Ed Davis is a difference-making player? No offense to Ed Davis.
He's not a difference-making player. I'm just saying, if someone's going to stun us in the East this year, I think Brooklyn has the best chance.
It would stun me. If you're going to go to Brooklyn next week and you want to get free drinks.
Where's Kenny Atkinson at, baby?
I think Jared Allen is a guy to watch, but I don't think he's a nice role player. I don't think he's a star, but I could be wrong.
Nick,
Brian, you have any? Yes.
I don't think we got to Charlotte.
My bad. I apologize to all the Charlotte fans out there.
Knicks should feel good though, because Orlando clearly is not the most irrelevant team if we just flat out forgot Charlotte. Wow.
You have anything to say on the Nets, Nick? First, Knicks or
basketball
Knicks?
Irrelevant. Knicks or Nets? The capital is New York, and it's shocking.
So sad.
It is.
Well, apparently
shocking.
Not.
Sad.
Apparently, the capital. Apparently, the capital is Charlotte, because I was ready to close this. Charlotte's over under is 35.5. They have. They definitely have a team that should contend for the playoffs. Kemba Walker is sending Valentine's to Charlotte and the Hornets fan base and everything like that. And I have no doubt that he's being sincere. Can they sign Kemba Walker to a $150 to $200 million contract next year, Kevin Pelton? I just don't think they can.
Can they and should they are different questions here.
Well, I mean, they did sign. This is a team that did give out some giant numbers to guys like Nick Batum. So
yeah, I think if he'd sign it, they'd sign it. I want to say something about the Hornets though that I don't think has been said for at least 5 years. I think they're going to miss Dwight Howard.
Wow!
Wow!
Whoa!
Everyone looked at them not making the playoffs last year and kind of attributed it to him. But, they were much better with Cody Zeller off the court last year than they had been previously. When he got injured 2 years ago, it tanked their season. Now they're back to Frank Kaminsky, Bismack Biyombo, and Billy Hernan Gomez as their backup centers. And I don't feel great about that if Zeller goes down, which he usually does.
I just want to point out, guys, that in the year of our Lord, 2018, when one of the top things we could say about a team is they're really going to miss Dwight Howard. That is terrifying. That fan base has got to be like, oh my God, what are we doing over here?
The Kaminsky and Malik. Well, okay. I mean, what do you think of Malik Monk? I mean, it wasn't much of a rookie year.
Kaminsky and Malik Monk. Those are your go-tos.
These are top 10 picks. These are top 10 picks.
Charlotte. I think Malik Monk he's going to be one of those streak shooters off the bench where he'll have a couple nights where he scores 25 and he looks great and everyone says, Malik Monk, he's so terrific. And then don't pay attention to the next game when he goes 0 for 8.
And exactly. Miles Bridges has looked, he's had some moments in the preseason. I have no idea what it means, but he's had some moments.
Yeah, he has looked good. He's looked very athletic.
35 and a half over under.
Who cares?
Wow. That hurts.
Well, we should pick over because of Kaminsky's photos the other day where the Charlotte Hornets passed out that letter to all of the employees asking for the player's names, the wife name, and the girlfriend name.
That's right. So. Yes, and Stan Van Gundy. Stan Van Gundy said this is clearly a misprint, that there should have been multiple lines for girlfriend. That's what he said.
Shout out to our colleague, Stan.
That's right. He's definitely working the media side now. All right. Well, this podcast has gone on interminably, but thank you for listening. If you made it all the way to the end, pat yourself on the back. And thanks for listening to the Hoop Collective Eastern Conference Preview.